Hey, it's Lori, and I'm away for a spring break for a few weeks, but I thought this would be a good time to share with you some of the podcasts of the past that you might not have heard or might want to hear again. These are some of my favorites. This week, it's my chat with Dawn Massler-Biggie. She talks about how the brain actually falls in love, both men and women, and how they're different. And there's some incredible takeaways. Check it out. Welcome to the Love on the Go podcast, brought to you by Carolina's Matchmaker. I'm Lori Burzak, and for over 17 years, I've been helping singles find the relationship of their dreams all over the Carolinas. Along the journey, I've met so many amazing professionals and experts from various fields, and I'm excited to introduce them to you. What's my goal? I want to help you look at love and relationships in a new way and to grow in your understanding of how love works. Let's learn together how people have overcome personal obstacles and have found love, first and foremost with themselves. The ultimate goal is realizing that you are worthy and deserving of love. Let's get started. Welcome, Dawn, to the Love on the Go podcast. Dawn Massler-Biggie, MS, is an adjunct biology professor, writer, and researcher on the science of love. She's a TEDx speaker on how your brain falls in love with 5.8 million views. That's incredible. And the author of the book, Men Chase, Women Choose, The Neuroscience of Meeting, Dating, Losing Your Mind, and Finding True Love, which came out in October of 2016. And you and I met in 2015. And yes, you've been featured in various national magazines and newspapers and NPR. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you. Thank you, Lori.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this conversation. And I want to talk about how your brain falls in love and the different stages of love and advice on what you can give women, especially on the anxiety that is so rampant when you do fall in love and you're in a relationship, because this whole season of Love on the Go is going to be all about emotional intimacy and keeping your stress level down and being able to keep your eyes wide open and excited about love and everything that comes along with relationships. So how did you get into this? It sounds like you have an interesting backstory on how you started to kind of, you know, discover the biology of love.
Well, I've been a biologist for 20 years, but I struggled with relationships. And I was picking the wrong men, and I did some work on myself, and eventually that led into the book, The Broken Picker Fixer. And I ended up writing a book on that. And then I really wanted to understand love. And the Broken Picker Fixer was kind of like it wasn't really based on science. It was just kind of like, you know, what I did and some of the stuff that a little bit of science, but not a lot. So I really wanted to dig into it. I'm like, what is this love really all about? There's gotta be a science base to it. And I've never read any books on it. You know, they're mostly about people's experiences.
And,
you know, there's a lot of comedians that write books. I'm like, why are they writing books on love? I don't get it, but
right.
Like Steve Harvey and, you know, He's Not Into You. Those are all like comedians. I'm like, all right, there's gotta be some more science. So I started digging, and I spent 5 years researching the science of love, going through, you know, I worked at a university, so I had access to limitless journals and, you know, the neuroscience magazines. And I just started digging into it and was like, wait a minute. And I realized that love was actually in phases, and no one's ever talked about this. Love is just one thing. So that's where that book came from, is that I really wanted people to understand what love was.
I love that. So how does your brain fall in love?
Okay, well, that's what the whole TED Talk is about, is it?
Yes.
How your brain falls in love. And in a nutshell, with women, it's oxytocin. And with men, it's vasopressin. And they're basically similar neurotransmitters. But with women, it's with hugging, kissing, loving, and in sex. Makes them fall in love easier. And then men, it's being sexually interested, but not getting it. As soon as he's satiated, it changes the vasopressin level. So he needs to stay in the chase mode for a while in order for him to fall in love. And then we have like I call it an enzymatic effect. the neurotransmitters build up, and then whoosh, we see this falling in love phase, and we see all kinds of chaos that happens in your brain.
Okay, so let me get this straight. What I think I just heard you say is that men need to stay in this chase mode for a little while before they actually fall in love. Mm-hmm. And if they have sex too soon, it sort of stops the chase, and then the in love phase may not even happen.
Correct.
Oh, interesting. So if a woman has sex with a man on, and we're talking right now about heterosexual relationships, and we'll get to homosexual in a little while as well. If a woman has sex with a man on their first date or third date or within the first, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, does that mean there's a lower likelihood of a man falling in love with her?
It could be. So there's also effect with if he thinks she's in his league. So the more out of his league, the more likely he is to fall in love. But if they're at equal levels, the sooner the sex, it could derail it.
So interesting, because I always say to my clients, don't have sex too soon until, you know, there's monogamy, until there's some kind of commitment, until exactly. You really know they're really into you. And generally speaking, that takes, you know, 3 months or so.
Correct. Well, in the TED Talk, I talk about this, is that when a man's testosterone drops, we know he's falling in love. And how does a man's testosterone drop? It drops with commitment. When he says, I want to be exclusive, we see that drop. I can actually take a sample of a man's saliva and tell you if he's in a committed relationship or not.
Are you kidding me?
No, I know. I kid you not.
Is there like a home test that women can do on this?
Well, you know, I was doing that for a little while. I had I started a YouTube channel. And the funny thing is, most people don't want to take the test. Most people want it serendipitous. And you have to actually have them spit in the tube.
You can't just like collect it off his toothbrush the next morning.
Exactly.
He's in love with me.
Okay. If he's cooling in his sleep, maybe you can do it.
Exactly. So what you're saying is it's best to take it slow in the beginning, mm-hmm. and kind of wait for the feelings to come through. And then how does a woman's anxiety play in with all of this?
Well, no, as she's starting to fall in love, it's mm-hmm. kind of wild is that her brain starts messing with her. Mm-hmm. And she starts feeling this anxiety. It's her amygdala is going off. And that's because a relationship is risky. And particularly mm-hmm. for a woman. So when the interesting thing is, what we found is that once you have sex, the amygdala shuts down.
Okay.
So oftentimes women will rush into a sexual relationship just to get that calming effect. But then it derails the commitment part. So you end up in this like vicious cycle. And I was in that one. I was in that where it was like, I have sex too soon. I'm not, you know, and I keep thinking I'm picking the wrong person, but I'm actually the one who's creating this cycle in my life.
Okay. And for those people that not everybody knows what the amygdala is. So can you explain that a little bit?
Oh, I should have had my graphic. So there's a part of your brain. It's kind of like a walnut inside your brain. It's called mm-hmm. the amygdala. And basically what it does is it sounds the alarm. Mm-hmm. So when you have any type of fear, somebody walks in the room with a gun, your amygdala gets active. And when you're starting to like someone and fall in love, your amygdala is active because it's saying, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. But once you fall in love, and that's oftentimes can happen once you have sex because the oxytocin level causes you to fall in love, your amygdala shuts down.
Okay.
Goes silent. And so here's the thing. Well, when you fall in love, that's another phase that lasts for about 2 years. Your amygdala is silent. So even if you notice something wrong with the guy later, mm-hmm. you don't register it.
Okay. So give us an example of what that looks like.
Okay. So I meet this guy. He's really handsome, right? Mm-hmm. I have sex with him. I mm-hmm. fall in love. I find out later he's a felon and he's mm-hmm. wanted by the law. But it doesn't really bother me because I'm already in love. So I end up hiding him. Or I'm like that lady that breaks him out of jail up in upstate New York, right? Uh-huh. Because my amygdala that should be sounding the alarm that there's a problem here, doesn't. Now that's an extreme example. But let's say another one. We find out he's still technically married. we continue on in the relationship because now we have these feelings for him.
Okay. Okay. And the amygdala shuts down or turns off upon sex, or does it just...
When fall in love.
When you fall in love. And right. A woman falls in love when...
She can often fall in love once she builds up oxytocin, which is kissing, hugging, loving. And you build up oxytocin when you learn to trust somebody. So that's a normal phase, right? Mm-hmm. But you get a huge dose on an orgasm. So if he's good in bed, you're more likely to fall in love.
And if he's not good in bed, you're probably on to the next. The in love isn't happening. You're safe.
Exactly.
Find a bad lover and your amygdala will be intact. Okay. Got it. So if a man's testosterone lowers when he falls in love, how does that show up in terms of the way he behaves, and what does that look like? Because a lot of times, you know, people equate masculinity and alpha with testosterone.
Yeah, and it is. So there is an actual almost visible effect. So we call, because with the testosterone, you do get the more muscle mass, the more chiseled body. With the commitment, he ends up getting a little bit softer. We split with like the dad bod, that kind of guy, you know. Now he's in a relationship, he's committed. Here's the thing, if you're in a committed relationship and the woman has a child, particularly if she has a baby girl, testosterone is even lower. So now serious dad bod.
How funny.
But we call it when a man commits, right? Settling down. So we do see a settling down of the testosterone, of his behavior. He's more calmer. He's not want to go out as much. You know, he's more likely to stay at home. He settles down.
Yeah. What about men that take extra testosterone when they're married?
So what happens is the testosterone drops so low, the poor guy's struggling. So he's like boosting it up, but usually he's not going to boost it up all the way up to like, you know, maximum effect. Mm-hmm. So when he's usually boosting it up, it still is below oftentimes the commitment level.
What advice would you give a woman to kind of help her stay focused during the process of falling in love, where her anxiety doesn't go crazy and she can kind of stay calm and clear-headed?
Well, the most important thing to know is that you're going to feel a little crazy. So go ahead and accept that and don't try to derail it by rushing into a relationship. One of the cool things that we found, which was interesting, was that meditation actually helps shrink the mass of the amygdala and thereby dulling the alarm, so to speak. It's not as loud and alarming because it's decreasing the effect by decreasing the mass. So meditation, taking care of yourself, realize that this is going to happen. Don't put yourself in an awkward situation where like you end up going to his house and then you feel the pressure, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That type of thing. You just realize that it's going to happen and then take your time and commit to yourself because you're the most important. You want to have, as soon as he commits to a relationship, you're free to go, but wait for that commitment.
Perfect.
He's got to ask, by the way. You can't ask for him.
He's the one that needs to ask for the commitment.
So you can state what you believe. So as the female, you're the prize, right? So you're like, I don't want to sleep with anyone until I'm in a committed relationship. Mm-hmm. You state what you mean. Now he's got to ask, will you be in a committed relationship with me? You don't ask him.
Because what happens when you do?
Well, what... We know that when he asks, the testosterone drops.
Okay.
But we're not sure if it actually does the same thing if you ask. He may say yes, but he's not really, not 100%. He may just be saying yes because he wants to have sex.
Okay. That makes sense. Understood. So let's take a scenario. I have a client who went on 8 dates with a guy that she met online. Mm-hmm. And we had big conversations ahead about not having sex before monogamy, and she was completely in and agrees. So they kept going on these dates. She never had the exclusivity conversation with him until recently. And when she did, she was kind of like, you know, let's just talk about this. You know, are we dating other people? Like, she wanted to kind of get down to it a little bit because, you know, she didn't want to put all her eggs in one basket, but at the, you know, it was kind of blocking her still from wanting to date other people because she was so excited about him. Mm-hmm. So having the conversation, not about necessarily being boyfriend, girlfriend, but being able to say, can we give this a shot? Is that okay to do? Or are you saying that the woman should never bring it up? She just has to just hold on to her emotions, not ever talk about how she's feeling about the relationship until he brings it up.
So there's the challenge. You want to get him to, I did coaching for a long time. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I found is that once a woman likes somebody,
right,
she stops dating everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Prematurely.
Yes.
And my thing is keep dating other people.
Yes.
You got to keep dating other people.
Yep.
And when she does that, it puts undue pressure on the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So when the guy can actually feel that,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it doesn't do well with him wanting to commit. It basically stops the chase.
Yeah.
So I call that the possum effect. If you can imagine a wolf running after a possum, right? And the uh-huh. possum is like, sees the wolf, starts running away, and then stops and plays dead.
Mm-hmm.
What does the wolf do? He walks up to the possum, sniffs, and walks away. Why mm-hmm. doesn't he eat the possum? Because it seemed too good to be true, right? There's a little part of his brain going, something's wrong here. I'm going to back out.
Mm.
So when a woman does that, she's basically going, possum, like, take me, I'm here. And there's a little part of his brain. And this is all primitive. This is not conscious. This is just instinctual parts of our primitive brain that are going right. off. And he stops and he's like, wait a minute. If she's a prize, it shouldn't be this way. And he'll start backing off.
Doesn't it kind of feel a little bit like a game?
Well, I know. I don't like that part of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to tell you the science.
Okay. So basically what you would suggest is don't have the conversation at all and just hold out and wait for the guy to bring it up.
Well, no, you can have the conversation, but you need to, you state what you want.
Right.
Because okay. you're the prize, right?
Exactly.
You're the one who's to be won over. Yes. I would like to be in a relationship. I would like to be married. I would like to be in a committed relationship prior to marriage.
Yep.
Marriage is my long-term goal.
Right.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
If you're not interested in it, that's fine. I'd like to know now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm going to go down the street.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Good. That's exactly what we talked about. That's what she did. And he said, yes, I want to be exclusive with you. And I'm not interested in dating anyone else.
Yes. I mean, and that's the way to kind of have it.
Yeah.
The question then rather than mm-hmm. to try to like, sometimes you get women to try to manipulate it and it's like, or they have that sense of desperation. Like, what are we doing here?
You right. know,
the guy's like, I was just having a good time.
Right. Or how do you feel about me?
Exactly.
You don't want to do that.
Where do you see us in 5 years? And now we're on an interview.
Exactly. Okay, good. You talk about in the book, the actions that you take at the beginning of the relationship can either cause the other person to leave or fall in love with you. Aside from sex too soon, is there anything else that you can be doing to create that love?
Well, any type of actually dishonesty, manipulation, all those things come into play because mm-hmm. again, we're thinking on a subconscious level. So instinctually, what's happening in the beginning of dating, your dating is all on a subconscious level. And mm-hmm. and what you're attracted to, you're attracted with your senses, like your smell comes into play. So a woman is trying to build up, she's building up oxytocin through honesty, through trusting. So if you do something that's not completely honest and she senses it, that can derail the whole thing. It's going to make it really difficult. And the same with a woman, but a woman, a lot of times with a sense of desperation will make the guy kind of back off because again, she's the prize. So why would she be making it so easy? You know, what's wrong here? There should be thousands of guys wanting her.
So are you in the camp of not making it so easy for a guy to make plans with a woman? Like if you don't ask me by Wednesday night for the weekend, you're out of luck, like kind of, and I know that's a little bit of a game too, but are you kind of in that mindset?
Well, I don't necessarily like the rules as much. And I read the book and actually, you know, I talked to Ellen but I don't necessarily like the rules so much just because it's not really like your true authentic self. I agree that you need to understand the science. So I'll give you an example. I got a phone call from this guy that I was dating and it was on a Wednesday or something. And he said, let's meet. And I'm thinking for Friday. I'm like, okay, that's fine. We can meet on Friday. And he goes, what are you doing tonight? And I'm like, tonight? This is not, you know, my head's going, no, this is not right. You know, and fortunately I was teaching a class. So I'm like, oh, I'm teaching a class at the college. And he says, oh, okay. The college is right near me. Do you want to meet afterwards? And I go like, no. But then there was a part of me that went, all right, I'm going to take a risk. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the risk. But I was fully within myself. Mm-hmm. I knew I was taking the risk. I knew it wasn't part of the rules, but I was comfortable with myself. And I said, okay, let's meet. We went out for sushi after my class. It was nice. Mm-hmm. Today, he's my husband.
Nice. I love that.
So I don't, again, it's like the rules are the rules, but in that particular situation, I was like ready to throw it out the window because I had a connection with him that I wanted to explore.
Perfect. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Let's talk a little bit about the different phases of love.
There's actually four phases. Mm-hmm. The first one is attraction, which has nothing to do with love. And that was a mistake I would make. I'd see him from across the room. I get those butterflies. I'd run over. I'm like, this is the guy, you know, and that's meant to be short term.
Okay.
And it only lasts, you know, it's ephemeral, very short term. And so are those relationships. Mm-hmm. But what it does is nature's getting you close together to get to know that person. The second phase is building up, is the dating phase. That's where you're building up the neurotransmitters to fall in love. That was the one we talked about, the oxytocin and the testosterone, vasopressin, testosterone. Mm-hmm. The third phase is actually falling in love. That's the interesting phase. That's the part I call being, you know, insanity, the insane. And we see all kinds of crazy things going on in your brain. Neurotransmitters are going down or some are going up. Parts of your brain are shutting down. Your prefrontal cortex, the thinking part of your brain, goes offline. So you don't want to fall in love in the middle of, you know, finals. And then that lasts for about 2 years. And then after 2 years, we make a choice. We make a choice to start to be loving. And we see it totally different in the brain. It comes out of the primitive part of the brain, and then it goes to the prefrontal cortex, the thinking part of the brain. So it's really about choices. It shares neurotransmitters with brotherly love, morals, ethics, kindness. All those are up there. And we also see some activity in the back of the brain where it's your opioid receptors. So it's a more nurturing, calming love than the one we see when you fall in love. We see the cocaine receptors going off. So it's like crazy, crazy kind of love. So it's totally different. And when people say love, I'm in love, it's like, well, what part of love are you in?
Yeah, exactly. Is it possible to be in love with two people at the same time?
Well, yes. I mean, you can be in long-term love. That's the last phase. In long-term love, you can be in love with lots of people because you're making a decision to be loving. So you can love your brother, your mother, your kids, your husband. You can love everybody. But to fall in love, it's one person.
let's talk a little bit about homosexual relationships.
Okay.
How does that differ from what we've talked about before?
Okay, so that's a little bit interesting. So we know when a heterosexual male falls in love, we see a drop in the testosterone. When testosterone drops, oxytocin actually raises or has the ability to help him bond.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is that he becomes actually kind of protective, like the oxytocin becomes protective. So if he gets near a pretty woman, he'll actually back off. Subconsciously, he'll back off from a prettier woman because he's protecting his relationship.
Okay.
The interesting thing is we don't see that same drop in homosexual men.
Okay.
So that type of, we don't see that type of commitment. So what is that? Does it make it any difference? We don't know because there hasn't been enough research really on those relationships. We know that for a female, now that she's taken the risk and fallen in love, she's more likely to get pregnant. So she's going to need a male to be around her.
Okay.
For a while to help take care of her. And of course, falling in love is for 2 years. So that would be pregnancy and 1 year of life for the child. So Mother Nature's got this. I mean, she's good, right? So yeah. Once after the first year of birth, the child's more likely to live. So, you know, then they fall out of the falling in love part goes into long-term love, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nature's doing that for a reason, but we don't really understand heterosexual or the homosexual aspects of it because it's a little bit different biologically.
So that's for men and for women?
So for women, we don't have the same type of biological effects. So I wonder, I haven't seen much research. And so the problem is, in order for you to do research, mm-hmm. you have to have a large group of people.
Mm-hmm.
So we can usually find a large group of people, heterosexuals that fell in love, and we can measure their brain activity. But it's harder to find a large group of homosexual women or men that have fallen in love at the exact same time that we can measure their brain activity, because they're a much smaller subset of the population. Mm-hmm. But they are starting to do some more research on it. I just don't know it yet, or I don't okay. have details of it yet.
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting to hear about in the future for sure. Okay. This has been so interesting. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think would be interesting for people to hear?
Well, one of the things that is kind of wild where people really want to be careful about falling in love and sleeping with people too quickly,
mm-hmm.
is that when you fall in love, and like I said, if the oxytocin rises up, a woman can fall in love. When she does that, her serotonin level, which is the hormone of happiness, you would think would go up, it actually drops. And it can drop to a level of like depression and OCD, and that it drops to OCD, and that's why you're so compulsive to be around that other person. But the problem is if the relationship doesn't work at that point, now you've basically created a situation where you are in depression. So that's why it can be even more painful than a normal breakup.
Huh. Okay. And the way to prevent that from happening
is not to have a sexual relationship. You really.
There you go. It all circles back to the same exact thing. Okay. Yeah. Actually, there was something else I thought about. I remember you talking about when we first met is, and it's in the book, men are very visual. Mm-hmm. And they can fall in love by photos.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell us more about that.
Well, so women have we use all of our senses when we are attraction, and mm-hmm. men have 25% more neurotransmitters in the visual cortex. So they're placing much more emphasis on visual.
Mm.
So it's not saying he's not looking at anything else, but he just has more on visual. So that's really what's going to attract him. And it's also one of the reasons why strip clubs work for men, because they're looking, you know, and they're not really supposed to be touching. So like they're now like connected. They're like, oh, this is great. I can, you know, I'm attracted. I can't touch. And so his vasopressin is skyrocketing, and all he just keeps going and sending money, giving money, giving money.
Very interesting. And maybe that's why men often post photos of themselves, like, you know, wearing a bathing suit online dating, they think that that's what women want to see. But exactly. In actuality, women aren't interested in seeing that. It's like a little jarring for a woman to see a half naked man.
Exactly. Exactly.
And my clients are like, no, thank you.
A woman has totally different criteria.
Yes.
So the man is looking, you know, for the visual stimulation. And he's like, well, I'd like to see her in a bathing suit. Well, how about this is what I like to see. I'll do it. And a woman, on the other hand, she actually, it's harder for her to fall in love online or through visually because she goes with the rest of her senses, her nose, her ears, even her sense of touch all come into play. So she's like registering for major histocompatibility complex through her nose, which is part of your immune system. She's more, she's actually more interested in somebody of the opposite immune system. So that's why it kind of makes sense where the tall, dark stranger, somebody from a completely different, we're most likely to be more attracted to somebody from a completely different genome genetically. But we also like familiar too. So if there is a familiarity, like, oh yeah, you're from, you know, your family's from Connecticut, mine too, then then there's that connection.
Yeah. This is fascinating. We're going to have to do a part two on this. This is so, so interesting.
Well, we can do a section just on attraction, just, you know, each section has can go on for details.
100%. This is great. This is a great start. If anybody wants to read more, definitely pick up her book. I'll put everything in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time. This is really fascinating and appreciate it so much.
This is wonderful. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Love on the Go. I hope you join us on our next episode. You can make sure to know when it is by following us wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, if you enjoyed it, it'd be great if you left us a review. I'd appreciate it. In the meantime, to learn more about me and how my team can help you, visit carolinasmatchmaker.com. Until next time.